halfway through today's program. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the Elite Sports Injury Clinic. Regardless of your talent level or how it happened, if you suffer pulls, tears, strains, or spasms, the Elite Sports Injury Clinic is your destination to get you back to health. Three convenient locations throughout Winnipeg means Elite Sports Injury Clinic is always available to get you back onto the playing field. Check them out online at physiowinnipeg.com. Yes, Ezra, you're raising your hand.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to be that obvious about it. We got to give a big birthday shout-out right now to Leah DeLotte, who works at Elite Physiotherapy, a good friend of ours, the official physiotherapist of Illegal Curve. And trust me, we need one with all the lunch and dinners that we have. So, no, but shout-out to LD.
We strain our backs eating food, you know, reaching for that last piece of pizza. That's
absolutely
really dangerous for us.
Yeah.
Her big birthday tomorrow, big 3-0.
Really?
Yeah.
Yikes. See, you guys always make fun of me for being the old guy. You guys are catching up to me rapidly, let me tell you.
Drew, I mean, you're
30. Ezzy's already to the big 3-0.
Yeah, if you combine our ages, we're catching up to you.
Very funny, very funny. Anyways, yesterday afternoon, the Anaheim Ducks really got rid of one of the biggest free agents that was scheduled to become an unrestricted free agent this summer in Ryan Getzlaf, signing him to an 8-year, $66 million contract extension. Just huge money for the Anaheim Ducks forward. It's an average annual value of $8.25 million. I'll throw it open, make it nice and easy. Your thoughts on the contract, good, bad, right about where you expected?
I'll start off because whatever I say isn't going to be as half as intelligent as what Richie says. But
as long as you know that.
We all knew that this contract was coming. The Anaheim Ducks and Bob Murray offered him the maximum under the new CBA, 8 years, $66 million. Ryan Getzlaf has refound his game after having easily his worst year of his career. You date back to as recent as 3 years ago, Richie, and we talked about this when we were on Kick. Ryan Getzlaf was dominant against the Red Wings in the playoffs, and he's back to being that dominant player. And now they've got Getzlaf and Perry. Boudreaux's got Getzlaf and Perry playing with Matt Bolesky, and Matt Bolesky is finally starting to make something of himself as an NHLer. He's been in the league for 3 years now. But the contract itself, for him, he has only played with one team, and his family's all based there. And it was clear that Getzlaf, out of the two, was the one guy that was going to sign earlier. Perry, obviously, is the guy that we'll talk about later. But as far as Getzlaf goes, he's the captain of the team, and on a night-in, night-out basis, is their best player. Corey Perry's good, too, but, you know, Ryan Getzlaf is the leader of that team, not just because of the C, but the other things that he does. Still absolutely dominant. What I love about Ryan Getzlaf, Richie, too, is he's not maybe a top five, top ten scorer, but Ryan Getzlaf, too, is a guy that roughs it up. He'll drop the gloves. You know, he's a throwback player, kind of like Iggy. He can really do it all. So the contract itself, I mean, that's when you're a player like him and you bring the intangibles that he brings. He's already won a cup and he's only 26 years old. You know, he deserves to be one of the top paid players in the league. I can't speak. A lot of people were saying it was too much money because he's not a 90-point player. But I think that, you know, in the playoffs, every single team in the NHL will want a guy like Ryan Getzlaf on their team. So for that, you're paying a little bit of a premium for what he's done in the past and what he can do in the playoffs. But overall, I mean, I like the contract, and it's for the Anaheim Ducks, knowing that Solani and Koivu don't have more than maybe 1 or 2 years left, you got to sign him.
Hey, I think first you analyze the player, right? And Getzlaf's been one of my favorites, as you guys know, for a long time. He struggled recently and, you know, really wasn't moving as well. I thought on the ice, he seems to be fully back to old form. So, you know, what can he do on the ice? Well, he's big. He can skate for a big guy. He's got a really good shot, which he's using more this year. He's as a beautiful passer. Just sees the game so well. He's physical. He's a leader. He does everything you want a number one center to do. And there aren't many number one centers. I mean, you know, you have 30 of them, but you really don't have 30 of them.
Right.
And he is, he's a talented guy. He's won the World Juniors, obviously the Olympics and Stanley Cup. I think a World Championships, too. The consummate, you know, pro. There's nothing not to like about the player. I have, you know, you look at the 8 years, I believe he's 26 years old. So you look at
27,
excuse me. So you look at 8 years down the road, have him until he's 35. You don't have him until he's 44. You have him until he's 35, obviously, you know, but the cap's now on the contract as per the new collective bargaining agreement. You can't go that far. Do I have some concern that the end, the tail end of that, with the way he plays such a physical style, he may wear down? I do. But again, it's not 39. You know, he's not in a Ginla shape, but it's not 39. And then you get to the actual contract, and you get to the amount of money it is per year. Is it a little high? Probably. But I think what people need to understand is this, at least to me. In the salary cap system, if I'm going to quote-unquote overpay, I'm going to overpay my best players. I'll underpay I'd rather think about it this way. You know, I'm not going to pay. We wouldn't pay Getzlaff 8.25. He's worth 6.8. And they argue, and then they ended up overpaying for a third-line guy in the offseason because they're trying to fill the roster up and they need to increase talent. Think about that perspective. You know, I'd rather overpay him. I'd rather overpay Getzlaff by $2 million a year. And instead of having, you know, Brian Allen on the roster, I sign a guy who's cheaper for $1.5 million a year and take that drop-off. Because the drop-off from Getzlaff to the replacement is very difficult. Hold on, Drew, one second. Think about if they lose Getzlaff. They never replace him.
No.
So it's worth the overpay per year to get him, because think about what's available instead. Nothing. Nothing's going to replace Getzlaff. So I don't have an issue with the contract overall. Is that, you know, in the market, remember, we're not talking about a guy who is restricted. He was unrestricted. He was gone. He's a superstar. He's gone. You can't replace him. You have to take that all into account. And I think overall, I'm fine with it.
On the free agent market, say he gets to July 1st or whatever the actual free agency day is, and maybe he was only going to get 8 years and $64 million, $8 million a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, he probably would have got that.
Yeah.
He probably would have got that.
Yes, he would have.
So instead, what you're doing is maybe you're paying an extra quarter of $1 million a year to prevent him from, to pay him for even not even getting to that point. You're saying, we appreciate you not even hearing other offers, so we're going to give you an extra quarter of $1 million a year. It's probably a small price to pay relative to the stress that you would have to go through for if he becomes completely available to talk to anybody in the league.
Well, your organization is set back. If you lose Perry, you're set back. If you lose Getzlaff and Perry, see you later. See you later for 5 years. You're irrelevant.
Yeah, he's not good. I would agree with that.
You're irrelevant. Well, then, and Solani, and you mentioned Ezzie, Solani, and Koivu. You are irrelevant.
Koivu's got, if I'm not mistaken, he's got 20 points on the year. Solani's still putting up the points. So we're not saying that they're done.
Oh,
but
no.
You can't expect anything more one more year of production from them.
Exactly right. With Ryan Getzlaff, you know that this is a guy who's still going to give you,
he's in the prime of his career.
Well, you know, what's he going to do? Maybe 4 years down the road from now, you'll start to see some slippage in his game?
No, very possible. But one thing I want to say about that as well is it's a type of player you're talking about. Ryan Getzlaff plays really hard, but Ryan Getzlaff, and it wears down on him a bit. But remember what his strength is. At the end of the day, he's got a great shot, but his strength is his vision and his passing. And that can carry forward, in my opinion at least, longer for more years than can a scorer who doesn't have a physical ability anymore.
Because it's one of those skill sets that isn't necessarily...
You can do it from the perimeter.
Right. It doesn't require you to go to the quote-unquote dirty areas like being a power forward goal scorer does.
That's right.
Well, let me ask you this question then. So we got Getzlaff, so you know that Anaheim can check that box. You know, it seems like Corey Perry is going to, at the very least, test the market.
Uh-huh.
There's been no indication whatsoever that he really is, wants to give up that opportunity. Is there a trade possibility on Corey Perry?
Yeah.
Talking about what we spoke about how damaging it is to lose an asset for absolutely nothing.
It's very much like the Suter situation.
That's right.
And especially when you're second in the conference.
Right. And if you had asked David Poyle, now, if you'd known you were going to lose Suter for nothing, playoffs notwithstanding, would you have tried to deal with him for a King's ransom? He might say yes.
He couldn't have honestly answered that and said he wouldn't have traded Ryan Suter. But also, guys, we got to factor in that the Ducks lost Justin Schultz for nothing.
Uh-huh.
And it's been less than a year since, that's 8 months ago that happened in July, 9 months, whatever.
Point,
I can't do very good math. But they have to make that decision. And as far as Corey Perry goes, yeah, he'd love to go to Ontario. He'd love to play for the Toronto Maple Leafs. If
all the writing is on the wall that he's going to be a Toronto Maple Leaf next year.
Yeah, sure. And again, you know, we were talking about Zach Parise has the Minnesota ties. That's where he wants to go. And then, you know, the Detroit Red Wings emerged as candidates, Pittsburgh Penguins and all that. But, yeah, you know, there are his heart. It's very possible his heart is in Toronto. So if he's going to leave you and you're going to get nothing for him, if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, you're going to have to give up quite a bit to get him.
Look at it from Anaheim's perspective. You know, if they know, whoever trading him to, if they know, unless it is Toronto, and I would hope you'd tell them that, really, if it was only Toronto. If they know that he's not going to resign, and the team trading for him knows he won't resign. Yeah, basically, they know for sure he won't resign. Then you really take your compensation down a bit.
Sure.
I think it would, not completely to zero, but it would dock the compensation a bit. Then from Anaheim's perspective, you have to take into account, well, we're second in the conference right now. We have a powerhouse first line. Our depth players are playing well. The toughness on the back end has helped. And we have depth and goal. If we can make a run,
right?
How much is it worth to us? And can we use that money to go sign his replacement available?
Back to the financial implications of making a long playoff run that we are talking about, with Ryan Suter or with anybody else, you know, just those games. Each playoff game is worth what? They say each home playoff game is worth what? $3 million?
Well, they used to say one, and you hear now it's about two.
Okay.
Well, in Winnipeg, with the beer prices going up, probably.
No. We don't know that. Beer prices, not necessarily at the arena, but
I'm kidding.
Beer prices everywhere else. You're right about that. You know, so that's the question that's a tough question for Bob Murray, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because Corey Perry can win a lot of teams the Stanley Cup this year.
I mean,
adding Corey Perry to a lot of these teams puts them over the top.
Richie, sure. I think Corey Perry is a good comparable for a trade. A good trade comparable is maybe Nash. And if you look at Corey Perry versus Nash, I would say Corey Perry probably at this point in career is better than Rick Nash, mm-hmm. but similar offensive value, similar age. Perry's a couple years younger, but you're going to have to give up a lot. You're giving up a few forwards and a defenseman, and not a few, you know, pluggers. You're looking at, you know, if you're talking the Toronto Maple Leafs, maybe Fratton, you're giving up a defenseman, maybe Gardner, even though the Leafs really like Gardner, maybe also a first-round draft pick. I mean, if you want Corey Perry now, and the Leafs, again, are a playoff team, so it's tough to, you know, we give the Leafs a hard time, but if you're a week before the April 3rd deadline, you're Toronto, you're in sixth place, will you give up a few guys in the future? Will you give up a Nazem Kadri to get Corey Perry, possibly go on a playoff run? I mean, these are the things that these guys are going to think about.
Depends on if you know if you can resign him. And Gardner was with Anaheim originally before being traded to Toronto. I guess we'll leave the segment in this note, Drew. There's also one other consideration. And I think we asked David Poile about it on NHL Midweek on Wednesday. How do we know what Corey Perry is without Ryan Getzlaff? And it goes both ways. What do we know about Getzlaff without Perry? But goal scorers rely on that passer, to me, more than the passer relies on the goal scorer.
If you had to pick one of the two, who do you want?
I'm still a Getzlaff guy. I always have been. I like Perry. I like Corey Perry a lot. I'm a Getzlaff guy,
though. I think Perry's better offensively, but I take Getzlaff for the intangibles, the leadership, the fact that he will mix it up. Perry's not afraid to mix it up either. He can play the physical style of hockey. He can get pretty chippy, too. But I'm with Richie. I'll take Getzlaff. It's a tough decision. Two really good hockey players, and I think what we're going to see is neither of these guys are going to become available in the UFA market. I don't think we're going to see a Suter Parise this summer. I think Perry is either going to be re-signed by Anaheim or traded before the April 3rd deadline. Put it on the board, Drew. I know you're looking at me like, ooh, that's not that bold of a prediction. I think the David Poile, Ryan Suter precedent is really important. Uh-huh. I think, you know, each move is scrutinized now with the salary cap going down to $64 million. You can't make... I think David Poile, you know, made an egregious error. I think regardless if he thought Ryan Suter was going to re-sign, I don't think he should have left it to chance. Because you let a guy become an unrestricted free agent and leave. And whether or not, you know, he thought he might re-sign or he thought he had a deal in place, he, at the end of the day, got nothing for one of the best defensemen in the NHL. And when you're Corey Perry, Hart Trophy a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. you can't let him go for nothing. Because like you said, these type of miscalculations cost you 5 years down the road.
I always look at my prime example is always Zdeno Chara.
When Ottawa let him go for nothing. Took that organization a long time. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be right back on TSN 1290.
4 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Jamie Lee for two shows, 7:45 and 10:30 p.m. You can give them a call to get your tickets, 204-488-4520.
I got to give all the people at Rumors, you know, props for last weekend. We saw Rob Schneider. Drew, unfortunately, you weren't able to come, but Rob Schneider was hilarious.
Yeah, you guys didn't invite me. It was really rude of you.
Yeah, right.
You know, and all the Legal Curve goes out all together, and all of a sudden, my invite falls on the wayside. How's
Drew,
that work out?
But Drew, you're married now. You have much better-looking priorities than us. So,
I appreciate you calling my wife better-looking than you, but it's a little bit odd at the same time.
Well, I didn't mean it to be odd. Even when I'm not trying to be odd, I'm odd. But no, but in all honesty, we saw Rob Schneider, and we're going to have Earl Skakel on later, was the opener.
Yeah.
But, you know, Rob signed autographs and was doing pictures after the show. And I've said this before, but, you know, I'm 30 years old, grew up in the early 90s, obviously. He's an idol of mine with Chris Farley, Adam Sandler, Phil Hartman, all those guys, Kevin Nealon. So to see Rob Schneider was great. Once again, just an amazing night at Rumors.
Well said. Craig Button, our colleague with TSN, came out with his updated draft rankings earlier this week. And the news that came out of that is that for the first time, Nathan MacKinnon was not the second overall pick. You know, according to his rankings, Jonathan Drouin has jumped ahead of Nathan MacKinnon. Seth Jones is still atop the list, but Nathan MacKinnon has dropped down. Do you believe that Drouin is going to be a better pro than Nathan MacKinnon, or have we just been focusing on MacKinnon for so long now that we're beginning to pick out warts in his game?
Drouin looks pretty good, Drew. I mean, I haven't seen them play enough. I've seen them both play, but not enough. But I mean,
also worth mentioning, MacKinnon's been out of the lineup for the last number of weeks with an MCL injury.
Yeah, but you know, that's a good point to mention to people. But I mean, Drouin just sees the ice. Not that MacKinnon doesn't, but sees it. I mean, and his stick handling ability. You just see them a little bit more going forward here. But I can certainly see how he'd be ahead of him. And it's not a knock, I think, on MacKinnon so much as it indicates how good Drouin is.
You look at Jonathan Drouin in the QMJHL, and he's not the same player as Jonathan Huberdeau, another guy that played in the QMJHL, but offers the same type of skill set. And Jonathan Huberdeau right now is quietly becoming the Calder Trophy favorite for a pretty bad Florida Panthers team that we saw last night. Mm-hmm. But Jonathan Drouin is lighting it up, and he's making it impossible for Craig to not put him number two on his list. And sure, that has, you know, a little bit to do with Nathan MacKinnon's injury, but really he's earned it the way he's played this year, and he's skyrocketed, really. And, you know, Seth Jones, even though you look at his totals and you're saying, oh, okay, they're not that impressive, but he's a defenseman. He's got 50 points or whatever for the Portland Winterhawks, who I believe have three guys with 100 points right now. Brendan Leipzig is one of them. But he right now is kind of separating himself between Drouin, MacKinnon, and that number one spot. But you could make the argument, and I think, you know, when we have Craig Button on next, he'll say maybe Jonathan Drouin should be the first overall pick. It's really difficult to say. We have these conversations all the time because people always ask us, you know, is Mark Scheifele going to be good next year? Is there a way to tell that Jonathan Huberdeau was going to be good, but Mark Scheifele wasn't going to be good? Like, why isn't he transitioning? And it's so difficult to predict. Does he get the right line mates? Does he adjust? Is he strong enough? And, you know, Jonathan Huberdeau is one of those guys that has stepped right into the NHL, and it almost seems like he's learning quicker than other guys. But, you know, Drouin has earned that spot, definitely the way he's played. He's a treat to watch. Everyone's seen that goal on TSN that he scored when he just embarrassed and undressed everybody. So I don't think we have a race for first right now. It's almost like a race for second, if you want to look at it
that. Let me ask you that question. That leads me into my next question. Is Seth Jones now sort of the unequivocal number one pick? Or does it depend on what your organizational need is between Jones, Drouin, and MacKinnon? Is it so close between the three that if you're in desperate need of a center, you take MacKinnon?
Well, what if it was the Jets?
If it's the Jets, I mean, you know, you would say their greater need would be McKinnon over right. Seth Jones, but I don't right. think anybody would quibble with if you took Jones and said, we're going to have the best defense in the league for the next decade.
Right. And then the organizational requirement thing kind of gets moved out of there. But I also don't think it's as easy as saying just take the best player, because they don't even know who they think is going to be the best player. It's almost like
it's
the advanced scouting is what they rely on, and they pick a guy and they go with him. I really, we should mention this too. Like we've had Craig Button on a bunch of times, and we're going to have him on closer to the draft. But you know, his rankings are important. But as we know, especially with the Winnipeg Jets, the rankings they don't go by that. Teams don't just check off guys. And
teams
have
their own rankings.
They have their own rankings. They also have their own game plan. And again, if a guy like Jonathan Drouin is playing this well, and a team says, we think he's the best player. We know what Seth Jones has a unique skill set, but we want Jonathan Drouin because we think he's the best player, period. And sure, we need forwards. We'll take him. But I think this year, again, it's supposed to be a strong draft compared to last year. And right now, there really isn't even any, it's not in between one or two guys anymore. It's in between three guys. Which is good. I mean, that's exciting for fans who are going to be following this.
And it even goes deeper. I mean, can you really go wrong in this draft? And is this the year if we're going to be bad? You might as well be really bad.
Yep.
And that's a question to ask, you know, because people will tell you. I mean, there are players after those three that are should be or ought to be in the conversation. And, you know, that's an organizational philosophy question. And how many more years can the Oilers be bad and continue to get these players? But or should you be bad to be able to get this depth in the system? And this year's draft is as deep, they say, people
yep.
who would know,
yep.
focusing a lot more than we do, would say this is as deep of a draft as there's been in a long time. And I guess probably since the last one, the last deepest draft would probably been 03, I believe, with Getzlaf, Perry, Richards, yep. and all those players.
Richie, we should mention that this year, as opposed to previous years, all 14
yes.
non-playoff teams will get a crack at the first overall pick, which is different yes. From past years when it was only, I believe, the bottom five teams
that's
will
right.
get a crack
you
at the
only,
first overall pick.
I believe
pick.
If you won the lottery before, you could only move up so many spaces, as opposed to now if you win the lottery, you get the yes. first overall pick. Yes.
Right.
That's the big difference there. But, I mean, you know, when you look at those three, and like you said, it's pretty hard to have a wrong decision when it comes to the question of McKinnon, Drouin, Seth Jones, and you know, and if you have to suffer through selecting Alexander Barkov, I think that's something you willingly suffer through. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Entering the final hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday afternoon. You can also listen on TSN1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com.
NHL news and notes.
NHL news and notes for this Saturday afternoon. We start with the Chicago Blackhawks, where they're tremendous point streak finally came to an end last night in Colorado. A Blackhawks team that just looked like they had just completely run out of gas. They were barely able to beat Colorado in that game two nights ago on Wednesday night. They finally met their match because everybody figured it was going to be Colorado that was going to do it.
Yeah, well.
Anyways, the Blackhawks finally lose their point streak. But more importantly to the Blackhawks is they lose Patrick Sharp for about a month.
Yeah, before that game.
Before that game, that's right. They lose him, I guess it happened in that Wednesday game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I believe so.
They lose him for a month with a severe AC joint shoulder separation. So he separated his shoulder. How big of an impact is the loss of Patrick Sharp on the Blackhawks?
In long term, obviously, it's not as big of a concern so long as he returns to the playoffs. I mean, they've clinched the playoffs. They've essentially clinched the first seed. I mean, I don't see if any other team really streaking that much over the last 20 games or so to take it away from them. So I don't think this injury will, so long as he's back for the playoffs, which at 3 to 4 weeks would appear that he is, I wouldn't be too concerned.
Right. You're not concerned, but you're also not happy that he's out. And hopefully his progression is on time. But, you know, Patrick Sharp is a really good player. Lots of speed down the wing. And they'll need him in the playoffs because if anybody is struggling, you know that you can go to him. But again, yeah, you know, you've already clinched the playoffs, so it makes it a little bit easier as opposed to if you're a team that's struggling, right?
Agreed. John Tortorella will be here Thursday night, Ezzy. You're already looking forward to that. Interesting quote from John Tortorella earlier this week. You know, all the time now in the NHL, we hear a player's got an upper body injury, he's got a lower body injury. You never really know what the player's injury is. The teams just don't volunteer that information. John Tortorella is equally as guarded, if not more guarded, with that information. And he had the following quote. A big part of a coach's responsibility, whether it's injuries and a lot of different things that come up along during the season, is to protect the player. This, with the media thinking they need to get all the information, I don't agree with it. Let me ask you guys, do the NHL franchises have an obligation to their fans to provide information regarding players' injuries?
I mean, we all know what that's derived from, if it's mandated by the league.
Right.
Gambling.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the NFL is.
Yeah.
That's why everybody knows every injury in the NFL. Toe, fingernail, cough. In reality, now they're not going to explicitly come out and say that, but we know that's where it's from. Hockey isn't a big business that way. Should we know? I think we should know more than upper, lower body. And I think John Tortorella on his high horse again, great, you know, holier than thou. If only everybody thought of him as he thinks of himself, he'd be in great shape. I think that, you know, teams, and sure, they're protecting their, you know, players, their assets, all that stuff, but at the end of the day, it's the fans who want to know. It provides, you know, specific information, and I don't think, you know, they pay a lot of money to follow the team. You know, maybe you should provide them with information about the team. And, you know, in terms of, well, I want to protect the player so he knows that his wrist is certain. The truth is, guys, I'm sure, first of all these players know what the injuries are in the other teams. Second of all, it's like when you're going 100 miles an hour, if you're going to hit a guy, you're going to hit a guy. You're not going to just go across. You're going to tap his ankle, his wrist, sure. But you're probably going to do that anyhow. How often is it that they're targeted? You know, for example, if a guy has a concussion, and they talk about concussions all the time, that's the most serious injury. I've said this before on the show. Concussions are the most serious injury, but they won't tell you about the wrist. So what does that mean? Players don't intentionally target a head after a guy's had a hand injury. I don't particularly think that it's that common that they target the wrist. And if they're in the position to target the wrist, I think it's a little backwards, is it not?
Well, do you think that that was going to be my follow-up, is that, you know, if you know that a guy is playing and he's got a bum wrist, mm-hmm. Can you have the wherewithal while in the midst of the action of the game to know to go after that guy's wrist?
Like, you can when you're in front of the net and you're kind of hacking him and things like that, but if they broadcast the concussions, why don't they broadcast everything? Because that's the most serious.
Because you're saying everybody knows when a guy has a concussion.
They tell him.
Sure. They send him to the quiet room and they come out and everything else.
Some liability issues there too. It's become more popular now. You know, the NHL has to acknowledge and tries to acknowledge it somewhat and pay attention to it. Because look at the NFL with that lawsuit right now pending from all the former players. They have to ensure that they don't admit it's an epidemic, but at the same time acknowledge it.
I think that even though fans want to know about every single injury, if you're paying the $100, the $200 to go to games, you want to know what injuries your players are suffering from. But I don't think we're going to get it. I think we can, you know, hope all we want, but it's not going to change. I think you're going to continue to hear upper body and lower body because, like you said, Richie, it's a liability issue. And it protects themselves and their players.
Let me ask you also, I mean, if the other team really wants to know, what do you think they do?
They go
to the film, they watch the game, see when he left, and see why he left.
They also talk to the other players on the other team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not this, you know, firewall between players interacting with one another, right, depending on the team they're on. How often do you hear about a guy who gets injured and, you know, it's not on purpose by the other guy, and the guy sends him a tweet, you know, or a text? Like, what's his name? Matt Cook sent a text to Erik Karlsson. The fact that Matt Cook has Erik Karlsson's number should pretty much tell you that every player has every other player's number if they really want to talk to one another.
They can get it, yeah.
So, I mean, the fact that John Tortorella or other teams and front offices and everything else think that by not publicizing it to the media that the other teams don't know what's wrong with the player is a bit of malarkey, as the case may be.
Yeah, it's malarkey, and it's also, you know, John Tortorella, for him to come out and say this, I mean, he obviously doesn't care how people perceive him or what the fans think, because whenever an injury comes out and it's upper body or lower body, it doesn't give anybody any information. And all it does is serves to frustrate fans who want to know what's going on with their players. And again, I don't see this changing because of the liability issues and the fact that it protects the team and the players.
Here's the final here's the end of the quote from John Tortorella. I think we need to give the media what they need. They have a job to do, but they don't need to know everything that's going on with your hockey club and players, including the public and the paying customers. They pay a lot of money, and we're trying to put on a good show for them, but they do not need to know everything about what's going on with our club. Ironic, given that in John Tortorella's case, the public knows nothing about what's going on with his club because he thinks he's so, you know, so much more important than everyone else. Continuing on with news and notes, Jason Spezza 3 weeks away from returning to the Senators lineup. You know, if the Senators can maintain this pace without Jason Spezza, then they get him back. You know, right now they are, you know, in sixth in the Eastern Conference, but they're within striking distance of Montreal for first for the lead in the Northeast Division.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. How important is Jason Spezza's return to this? Can the Senators make a run with Jason Spezza but without Erik Karlsson?
No.
So Spezza's return would be nice, but really not overwhelmingly impactful come playoff time?
That would be impactful. I mean, I think it takes them from getting out of the first-round team. A first-round loss to possibly getting out of the first round. I think without Karlsson, they can't get past that next hurdle if they were to get to that point.
If you're the Ottawa Senators and it looks like you're in a very good position to make the playoffs, I agree. If your first-round matchup is favorable, fine. If you're going to match up against the Pittsburgh Penguins, mm-hmm. probably not. Your AHL guys have got you this far, but you're going to need a shutdown guy. And even though Karlsson isn't a shutdown guy, he's offensive by the way he carries the puck.
The dynamic that he brings, even though it's not, even though he's not a shutdown defenseman, the dynamic that he brings is so overwhelming that it's impossible to replace that. Final point on news and notes, Chris Bourque placed on waivers by the Boston mm-hmm. Bruins. Were you surprised that he went unclaimed?
I was a tad surprised. I thought he actually looked pretty good. We saw him here in town and, you know, skating pretty well and attacking the puck. Just because guys get claimed, you know, Zach Boychuk, and I know he had this higher ceiling and was maybe thought more well thought of, but Zach Boychuk's been claimed twice now, once by Pittsburgh and once by Nashville. And, you know, the players that the Jets have claimed. And, yeah, I was a tad surprised that he couldn't find his way onto some NHL roster, at least for a short period of time.
Anything, yep. You agree with that?
I would generally agree with that, yeah.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to break. When we come back, Andrew Gross, covering the New York Rangers, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Record newspaper in New Jersey. He covers the New York Rangers, Andrew Gross. Andrew, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Not bad. Just heading on down to D.C. for tomorrow's game.
There you go. Andrew, the Rangers are finally into a playoff spot, eighth place right now. But for the most part, I think everyone would agree it's been a disappointing season so far for the Rangers, especially given the high expectations at the beginning of the year. What, in your estimation, has been the main cause of their struggles so far this season?
You know what? Their lineup's been a little bit top-heavy just because of them trading for Rick Nash, getting, you know, having to give up Brandon Dubinsky and Artem Anisimov and a couple other guys going, Brandon Frost. It's taken them a while to kind of get the line balanced here. And for whatever reason, you know, the consistency that they showed last year, I think last night's game, the 3-2 loss to Senators was a perfect example of a game that they probably would have won last season. It was the second leg of a back-to-back. In the last 10 minutes of the game, you could just see the old gas meter went to empty. I mean, they didn't have the next gear that they had last season. I just think it's figuring out the roster, and I know we're halfway through the season now, as remarkable as that is, but they're still trying to get through the fact that it was kind of a rush start to the season with a weird training camp. They never got their legs underneath them to begin with, and now they're struggling to catch up.
You talk, Andrew, about the lack, maybe the change and the lack of depth now on the roster. How has the Nash trade affected the overall team chemistry?
Well, I mean, I don't want to put a negative spin on the Rick Nash trade, because this guy has just been a monster. I mean, when he's healthy, it's remarkable. I was talking to someone at practice today. I guess it's on us for not paying attention as much, when he's in Columbus. But they really weren't. That the Blue Jackets aren't on national TV, and they're not really on the national radar. Mm-hmm. So you just really, you knew Rick Nash was a really good player, and you saw that in the Olympics, but until you see it on a day-to-day basis, you don't really appreciate just how good a hockey player this guy is. And he's strong on the puck. He goes one-on-one. He's a good teammate. He's a good line mate. He works hard in the room. He's just been everything that the Rangers have really needed. It's just a matter of, when you get an elite player like this, you have to give up stuff. And, the middle of their lineup was hurting for a little bit. Now, acquiring Darryl Powell from Minnesota really solidified things. He was, he's kind of balanced out the lineup. And, as small a tweak as that was, mm-hmm. him for Mike Ruff, it really helped Torts lean on at least three lines instead of two, and on occasion he'll actually extend to four lines now.
Andrew, everyone saw the injury to Mark Stahl. It was a very scary injury, taking that puck to the eye. How does his absence on the decor affect the Rangers' Stanley Cup aspirations?
Well, Mark Stahl had clearly reestablished himself as team's number one defenseman. He was contributing offensively. He's just so stout and hard to get by defensively. He had had a rough last season, missing the first 36 games because of the concussion, and he never just got back to that number one level that he had played at the previous season. But this year you really saw that out of him. Without him in the lineup, and it's it really is indefinite. We got to see, the swelling's got to come down on his face before they really make some determinations on how bad the damage is, although the doctors are very hopeful that he's going to make a full recovery in time. You see it, Torts is just spreading out the minutes now over the six, but it really pushes people into spots, into more minutes than they're, that they have been getting. Michael Delzato, instead of on the third pair, power play guy, is now in the top four. Anton Stralman getting more minutes. Ryan McDonough, who had some struggles, is back paired with Dan Girardi on the top pair. And now Steve Eminger, who had kind of been a consistent healthy scratch and had actually gone down to Connecticut for a conditioning stint, is now the team's number five defenseman, with them having to pick up veteran Roman Hamrick off waivers just to kind of fill out the roster there. Torts has taken a look at Roman over the past two games and determined that he's not in game shape yet, because he went a month without playing for the Capitals. So Hamrick's not going to be in the lineup tomorrow when they go back down to Washington.
You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Andrew Gross. He's from the Record newspaper in New Jersey. He covers the New York Rangers. Andrew, we are contractually obligated to ask about the visor situation anytime a player suffers an eye injury. Has it caused any of the Rangers players to change their personal policy about wearing visors?
Yes. Taylor Pyatt was saying the other day that he's probably going to reconsider, that he'll probably pop a visor on. I talked to Brian Boyle about it, And he couldn't give me a good reason for why he wasn't wearing a visor. He said he wore one in the AHL and it's fine. It's not that tough to get used to. But when I started to sort of press him on whether or not he would, go to a visor now, he sort of said, you know what, I'm really trying not to think about it. It was such an awful injury. I just don't want to think about it this minute. I think Brian, in time, will probably reconsider. I think a lot of players around the league, because it was, because of HDTV and the camera angle and the slow motion, I think players around the league really saw how horrifying a play that is. And, I saw where Bill Daly said that the percentage of players is now up to 75%. I would imagine you're going to see another spike in that probably, by this time next season.
Andrew, John Tortorella's, a lot of attention was given last year to when the Rangers were making that run, losing to New Jersey in the conference finals, about the style of play and blocking shots and maybe not a ton of puck control. The team has a lot of top-end offensive talent. Has John Tortorella shifted his mandate and style of play at all this year based upon the fact that players like Gabrick, Nash, Richards are filling his roster?
No. It's an interesting question because, sometimes coaches, you saw, to use an NBA analogy, when Pat Riley was coaching the Lakers, it was showtime and run and gun and get the ball to Magic Johnson and get the ball up court as quickly as you can. And then when he came to the Knicks, it was defense, 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 because that's what the personnel he had. But it's been very interesting to talk to guys like Rick Nash, like you said, Marion Gaborik, and pretty much anyone on the Rangers will tell you that, no, the style doesn't change, and it doesn't matter who's on the team. Torts expects the same style of play out of everyone. Granted, Nash is going to give you stuff that, you're not going to get out of a third-line player. But, defensively, yeah, Rick Nash is expected to be physical, and he's expected to forecheck. And he is not, no one hangs around the blue line waiting for a long pass and waiting to be sprung. There's none of that with the Rangers.
Andrew, if the Rangers decide to pull the trigger on a move before the trade deadline, do you think they're going after another defenseman? Or what position do you think they're going to address? We know that they picked up Hamrlik off waivers, but do you see them addressing a certain need at the deadline? Or do you think right now it's a bit of a question mark?
Well, I think they're going to, I think they do want to get some medical reports on Staal and see whether indefinite means this whole season or whether there's a chance he could be back to the playoffs. But I think if you're going to start anywhere, yeah, you do have to start on defense. You need to shore that up. Right now, I think you look at the Rangers' sixth defenseman without Staal, you don't see a Stanley Cup winner with no disrespect to the guys on the team. But, I think there needs to be a little more depth there. I mean, the other issue is they picked up Roman Hamrlik and his $3.5 million prorated salary cap hit for this year. And, that may, hinder a little bit of what they're doing. There's been some talk that they might want to bring back, obviously not a defenseman, but they want to possibly have been interested in bringing back Max Zuccarello, who was in the organization, the Norwegian Hobbit, who was in the organization the last few years, played over in the KHL this year. They've been in talks, Zoot's agent, Don Meehan, has, been in some communication with Glenn Sather about a possible reunion. And, Zuccarello talked to a Norwegian paper yesterday. I got the translation on that. And he said, coming back to the NHL certainly would be tempting, but he would have to get the guarantee of a one-way contract, which is something, so he wouldn't be buried in the minors. But, that might be a move that the Rangers might be able to fit under the cap. Although, again, I think Hamrlik's $3.5 million is really going to limit what the Rangers do coming towards the April 3rd deadline.
Andrew, talking about a guy like Matt Zuccarello, and he wouldn't require, compensation aside from financially. Who do you see the Rangers, if they do try and address that defensive deficiency as you mentioned, who do you see the Rangers using as the as an asset going the other way?
Well, I mean, he's not playing well right now, but I'm sure they're offering up Brian Boyle around the league, seeing what they can get for him, because he sort of played himself out of the rotation here. And unfortunately, in Brian's case, you're trying to selling, not selling high right now. You're selling low. He's got one assist in 19 games. Yesterday was his fourth game as a healthy scratch. I mean, they're really, you know, Torch has given this guy opportunities to try and get his game going. But, you know, he hasn't scored a goal since game three of the first round last season. And now with just one assist in 19 games this year, you know, I don't know what kind of interest or, you know, it would certainly have to be Boyle and a draft pick to, you know, probably get back the kind of defenseman that they want and maybe Boyle another player. But I think right now you probably start with Boyle, although I think a lot of teams are going to be asking for, a guy like Delzato, which I think the Rangers will probably still be a little hesitant to do.
Final question, Andrew. And I think it was 2 weeks ago now, Don Cherry was on Hockey Night Canada, and one of the points he made was the Rangers seemed to be getting pushed around a lot. You know, Brad Richards was getting pushed around, and nobody was really answering the bell for New York, and with Proust having gone to Montreal. Is team toughness an issue to you, or is that overblown?
You know what? I would have said it was overblown, except last night there was a play where I think it was the rookie on Ottawa, Jacob Silverberg, just absolutely snowed Henrik Lundqvist. I mean, it was pretty bad, right in the mask, right in the face, and Anton Stroman is standing right there, and he sort of gave the rookie a half-hearted push. I'm thinking, I know Anton Stroman is not the guy you're looking at to be the physical presence, but, you got to defend your goalie. You got to stand up for teammates, and Anton is the guy standing right there. So, there has been maybe a little bit of a lack of, fight that Brandon Truss brought to the team. I think the Rangers recognized that, and they brought Michael Haley up. He played his second game. They brought him up from the A earlier in the week, and Haley certainly brings that element to the team. It's been a little bit surprising to Bickle, who last year was, he's a big guy. He's about 6'4", and he was a main fighter last year. He's really not dropped the gloves much at all this season. And I think that's been a little bit surprising. Maybe you look for that a little bit more. Although, it's really a fine line. You don't want to advocate these guys running around looking for fights because, that's not what hockey is anymore. At one point, in the 70s, that's kind of what you would push for. But, in terms of standing up for guys, and getting back to Boyle, that's what Tortorella wants out of Boyle. He wants some more physical play. So I just think across the board, you're looking for guys to play with a little bit more of a fight.
Andrew Gross, he writes for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. He covers the New York Rangers. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime. Have a great weekend, guys.
You too, Andrew. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, producer Remus, and myself, Drew Mindell, here with you on this Saturday afternoon. If you know anything about us and the way we've conducted the show over the last 4 years, you'd know that if we have an opportunity to interview a Jewish comedian who loves hockey, there's no way we're passing up that opportunity. Accordingly, a guy who was here last week at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, a proud sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he took in that Jets-Caps game last Saturday. His name is Earl Skakel, and he joins us now on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Earl, Shabbat Shalom.
Well, l'chaim, l'chaim. I am humbled and honored that you guys would have my intro music to the soothing sounds of Stephen Piercy's voice and the rest of Rat.
I'm glad you knew what that was, because I certainly had no idea whatsoever. Now, Earl, you're from Los Angeles, that's right?
Yes.
How does a guy from Los Angeles, grows up in Southern California, become a big hockey fan, so much so that when you perform wearing game-worn retro hockey jerseys?
Well, it's a wild story, but this may shock you guys that L.A. hasn't always been a thriving hockey metropolis. And in the 80s, we didn't get the King games on TV, but we got the New York Ranger games on cable, and they had a player by the name of Barry Beck, who was just, he was like the Shaq of hockey back then. He was just so much bigger than everyone. He had a big afro. He looked like a porn star on ice. And I just became fascinated by him, and then Ron Duguay, who looked like a model on ice. And I actually grew up a Ranger fan, and of course, I'd be remiss if I did not name Eddie Boxcar Hospodar as well.
So what you're saying is, you know, based on, you got the one guy with the, you know, the Shaq guy with the big big fro, and you got Ron Duguay with the flowing locks. Are they your inspiration? Because when you perform, I mean, you have quite the flowing head of hair when you do your stand-up acts as well.
They do. I mean, I'm a, Barry Beck's my favorite player of all time. I model my image after him, and Duguay was a good-looking dude. And that, I mean, that's when hockey was hockey. People are talking about wearing visors now. They didn't wear helmets back then. How many injuries did you see? None.
You know, Earl, I think we also have to give huge props to Scotty Hartnell and Mike Commodore, who have beautiful hair. But I want to ask you a question, because we all saw you opening up for Rob Schneider, and you were hilarious, obviously. And you were talking about your time at the Winnipeg Jets game. Who are some of the guys that stood out for you? What did you think of our team? Because we're only, this is only the second year for us.
Well, I loved Anthony Peluso. I mean, he it's so neat to watch a hockey fight when one guy knows how to do it and the other guy doesn't.
yeah, some people call that assault in other terms, you know.
I mean, I've seen hundreds of fights live. I've got probably 1,000 DVDs in my home with fights. And I never have felt so squeamish during a fight. It was like Rocky hitting the meat and the lock. You literally heard just whap, whap. So, Volpatti must be Parcromagnon to,
Now, when you took to the stage of Rumors last week, opening for Rob Schneider, like we mentioned, you were wearing a retro Manitoba Moose jersey. Is that one you had in your closet, or is that something you picked up when you came to town?
Actually, I had that one in my closet, and it was the great enforcer, Darren Kimball. And it's kind of a great story behind it. You know, Kimball played on the Moose. He was traded. Aaron Downey comes in, another legendary enforcer. They give him Kimball's jersey. Kimball's first game back, he fights Downey in his own jersey, basically. And this shows you why I haven't made it in stand-up yet, that I have this intimate knowledge of jerseys.
I got to tell you, not very many people, not very many guests on this show, hockey obsessive guests, people who cover it day-to-day, would remember a Darren Kimball story, let me tell you. So that's pretty impressive. Now, you know, obviously you were at the Jets game last Saturday. Unfortunately, it was a bit of a disappointing game in terms of the outcome, in terms of how the team played. But how would you compare the atmosphere at a Jets game versus, you know, a typical Kings game, maybe notwithstanding the Stanley Cup run from last season?
Well, let's just go back 2 years to a King game for probably a better comparison. You know, the Jets fans are, you know, it's like a mosh pit at a Slayer concert. And, you know, King fans 2 years ago, it's like they're in the lawn at a Glen Campbell concert. you know, King fans are great, though. You know, King fans are a lot like Motorhead fans. They're small in number, but they're as good as any fans in the business. You know, L.A. will probably never be a hockey town like Winnipeg, just because... not that there's not a lot of things to do in Winnipeg, but, you know, the Jets are probably one of the top two or three things, whereas the Kings are probably sitting at about 10 spot in L.A.
Yeah, Earl, you know, the you mentioned to us before we brought you on that there's a guy who sort of gets under your skin a little bit, and you have some words about him. That's Patrick Kaleta.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I don't understand. You know, the NHL for the last, probably since the lockout, you know, and they'll never admit to this, but, you know, they've tried to get rid of the John Scotts, the Bougards, the Bielaks, the Rippins. You know, if they were still alive, the league wouldn't want them. The Brashears, the Larocks, you know, guys who fight honestly, but they seem to really get off on keeping guys like Coletta and Cook and a couple other guys, and I just don't get it. You know, at least the fighters are pretty honest guys, and they'll fight. You know, I just watched the fight with Sean Thornton and Ronaldo. You know, Thornton had him down, but he didn't take advantage. You know, I mean, Coletta, it's his, what, fifth suspension, and if you think that's just the fifth suspendable offense that he did, you know, you're probably thinking Kiss is in it for the fans still. I mean, what are they waiting for with a guy like Coletta or Cook or, you know, even Steve Ott to a degree? I mean, I'm almost rooting for someone to get really hurt before the league goes, oh, maybe we have a problem here. I mean, these guys, you know, they don't fight. He wears the shield. And what he did to Richards was horrible. And people saying Richards dove, who dives shoulder first into the boards. I mean, I'm all for, you know, a good storyline. And then Cook stepping on Carlson's knee. Who's ever gone into the boards with their left foot in the air and stomps down on a guy's calf? I play hockey, not on a super high level, but I've never gone into the corner with one foot up. I mean, it's crazy. The fans and the, you know, like Mario Lemieux was, you know, who signs Cook's checks, was saying what a great guy he is. I'd love to see him if Cook was on Dallas and he stepped on Crosby's calf like that.
Earl, where can our fans find out more information about you?
You know, it's pretty simple. I'm just on Facebook and Twitter at Earl Skakel. You know, it's a weird last name. It's just S-K-A-K-E-L. And, you know, I might be back up in Winnipeg sooner than I thought with the USC coming up there.
Well, there you go. You can talk about those enforcers as well. Earl Skakel, he's a comedian. He's a hockey fan. He's a guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, you guys are the best, and I can't wait to come back, man. Thank you very much.
Take care, Earl. Thanks very much.
I wanted to talk about, earlier in the show, we talked about Hainsey and possible trade options. And just, you know, thinking about it logically, and we've talked about the Rangers being an option for Hainsey. I mean, for the Jets and Hainsey, you know, Connecticut boy, too, so there's a connection there. Obviously, the back end is missing Mark Stahl. But, you know, they mentioned Brian Boyle, possibly. Andrew Gross particularly mentions, you know, Brian Boyle being available. Well, maybe there's a fit there for those two guys. Because, and you know, you're speculating, obviously, but the Jets want size at the middle. We know that. I mean, we can gather that from people we discuss and talk to and with the games we watch.
And they've said it themselves.
Right, so they want size at the middle. Brian Boyle's big boy.
You can't get much bigger than Brian Boyle.
Yeah, it's like Ezzy in Switzerland. But, you know, the Boyle is big. He doesn't play that, you know, he's not mean, but he's 6'5". That he kind of would slot in as, I mean, do the Jets have a third line center right now? They kind of move it all over and they move Bermistrov and whoever it is sometimes to the wing, but maybe he'd fit. Maybe that would be an option. So just one thing to float out there.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment coming up on TSN 1290. Three with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday afternoon. One final segment. We call it Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire. Ville Leino of the Buffalo Sabres is getting close to making his season debut for the team. He has been out all year with an injured hip. Last year, his first with the Sabres since signing a six-year, $27 million contract. He had 8 goals in 71 games, making him grossly overpaid. Which player in the NHL makes the most money but provides the least results?
I mean, James Wisniewski has got to be up there. That was an awful deal. Antropov's got to be up there, too. He's been pretty terrible. And those are a couple of the guys who are just grossly overpaid and provide absolutely no value for their team. Wisniewski a little bit, but, I mean, my God, that was a terrible contract. We can keep going here. I mean, per season basis, we can look at Ehrhoff, or we can look at the whole duration of the contract. I mean, there's a lot of bad contracts out there, Drew.
Yeah, there's lots of bad contracts. Tell me the one that sticks in your craw the most. Which player right now in the NHL gets paid the most money but provides the least results?
The Wisniewski one, because he never went close to earning anything like that at all. I mean, Antropov has had some years of success offensively. But there's other players. But, I mean, Wisniewski is the one that bothers me the most.
Has the statute of limitations ended on Alexei Yashin, because he's still getting paid by the New York Islanders? But that was probably one of the worst ones. I would say, you know, again, we're picking on Nikolai Antropov, but, you know, that's one of the worst ones, I would say. And, you know, there's a lot of defensemen out there that are overpaid. Again, I would say, you know, Dennis Weidman, for what he's giving offensively to the Calgary Flames, he's got to be up there. Yeah. So I would probably agree with Richie. It's probably those two guys. And again, you know, you talk about you know, not, having no problem overpaying your top players, but when you're kind of a fourth, borderline fifth, sixth defenseman, you're giving a guy $5 million a year, like Dennis Weidman, that's got to be an overpay.
DiPietro, Brizgalov, I mean, where do you want to start?
Florida Panthers coach Kevin Dineen called out goaltender Jakob Markstrom after he was pulled from the Panthers-Capitals game for allowing two goals on the first two shots he faced. Obviously, he played better last night against the Jets.
He did.
Yep. Post-game, Kevin Dineen said, and I quote, "I don't like to hang out anybody to dry, but obviously I don't think Markstrom was ready to play tonight," end quote. Do you think this biting criticism will make Markstrom a better goaltender in the long run, or will it damage a young goaltender's confidence?
I think it makes him probably better only because of this. I'm not intimately aware of exactly what goes on in that organization, but I think Kevin Dineen would know his player well. And I think if Kevin Dineen thought he couldn't handle a comment like that, he wouldn't have made a comment like that.
And that's what happens when you throw a guy into the lineup. Jose Theodore's injured, and you know Jakob Markstrom wasn't quite ready. He's still young. And I guess kind of you could say this might be a cop-out answer, but the proof is in the pudding that he made some tremendous saves against the Jets last night, even though they lost. I mean, he had no chance on the Byfuglien goal. The Byfuglien goal was perfectly placed, but you know he called him out, pulled him in that loss. And, you know, he responded with a better game. But, again, Dineen is a longtime NHLer, a coach that's had a lot of success in the AHL. He knows what he's doing.
Tonight, Minnesota Wild defenseman Ryan Suter will play his first game in Nashville since leaving the franchise via free agency this past offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking to the Tennessean newspaper about his return, Suter said, and I quote, "It's going to stink, and I wish the fans knew. Well, I know they know how much I enjoyed my time there. But it's just part of the business. I mean, you have to make decisions for yourself and for your family." Close quote. What kind of reaction do you think Suter will get tonight in Nashville?
It won't be friendly. And, you know, I understand that. They're going to be angry. They're not going to be happy with the fact that he left. They got nothing for him. That he, you know, by comments made, you know, we had David Poile on this past week, but comments made by David Poile earlier in the summer would have led you to believe that maybe he was a little bit misled at that time prior to the signing with Minnesota. So I don't think the fans will be happy at all, and I don't blame them.
Who knows how many guys are not just guys, but how many fans are going to boo Suter, but I don't think you're going to see the red carpet and a four-minute video presentation for Ryan Suter, even though the way he played in his early on in his career, he probably deserves it. Yeah, it's probably not going to be that pretty. I don't know if it's going to be as bad as, you know, Chris Pronger and visiting dressing rooms, but it's probably not going to be, you know, the best welcoming.
It happens rarely in hockey, but Wednesday night in Calgary, during intermission of the Sharks-Flames game, a fan streaked onto the ice surface clad in only a pair of boxer shorts.
Is he? Where were you that night?
A more infamous incident of streaking also occurred in Calgary in 2002 when a fan climbed over the glass buck naked except for a pair of socks, slipped on the ice, hit his head, and knocked himself unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to streak the ice at a hockey game, would you go with the modest boxer shorts approach, or would you show the entire crowd your entire package, shrinkage notwithstanding?
Okay, Remus, I just... I actually didn't mind this.
I like this question. I'm going to answer it.
It's a good question.
From a guy who's streaked to the quad before.
Yeah.
If you're gonna, you know what? Everyone's heard this saying. This is what happened. By the way, is there any way, Richie? First off, you're my lawyer. So is there any way I can answer this question without being held liable? So, anyways, I'm going to answer this question.
As long as you're not holding Matt
liable.
We're
in Canada here. It's a great Canadian saying that goes, "Go hard or go home." If you're going to streak, you don't wear boxers. You go all the way.
Well, you know, Drew, I don't know where to start here.
Guy's got a point.
Remus, what are your thoughts?
I'm not saying I would do this, but Ezzy's go hard, go home. He's
boxers. If you're gonna sound logic, boxers, right there. You might as well not do it.
If I had to give you my opinion on everybody in the room, Drew, I'd say would talk and would never do it. Remus would talk and never do it. Ezzy wouldn't talk and would just do it.
Well, I do it in front of my house every day of the week, so not a big deal for me.
And me, I'll leave that to the three of you, but. Yeah,
that was a cop out.
Yeah, that was
a mail-in answer, Richie.
Before we get to cheers and jeers and wrap the program, what are you looking for from the Jets in tomorrow's game against New Jersey?
Well, I mean, there's two wins in a row, so they better go streaking.
That's good. You redeemed yourself.
You know, I, Drew, you're mentioning that they're going to play, obviously, in the New Jersey Devils are playing Saturday in Carolina. So, you know, the Jets are going to be rested in New York, you know, because they're not going to party on Saturday night.
supposed to say that with a straight face.
But, Drew, I do think that the New Jersey game is a game that the Jets can absolutely have. It's a road game. It's the end of a road trip. But I think it's a game that they can absolutely have. It's not a must-win. I don't think, you know, we'll need to win this game or else. But it's a game that they can have. And a team in New Jersey that, to me, is susceptible defensively. I know they've put Peter Harold in the lineup recently. He's a smaller guy, moves the puck, but he's also somebody you can work on the boards. Mm-hmm. And the rest of their defense has their deficiencies. So I really do believe that the Jets have a good opportunity to take 6 out of 8, which would be impressive.
And you got to take advantage of the fact Johan Hedberg is not having a good year, even though he was great for the Moose. But you got to take advantage of that. You got to pepper him with shots, and you have to take advantage. Shut down Ilya Kovalchuk. Still one of the most dangerous players in the league. Mm-hmm. And I know Zajac's been struggling, and Clarkson after having that great win. But you know, the Jets have got to match intensity levels, energy levels, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, get on the Devils early. The one thing the Jets have done really good, especially on the road this year, is get the first goal. That's really important when you're a team that doesn't score a lot of goals. So, you know, take advantage of the few areas where the Devils are struggling, you know, and they'll be all right. Great opportunity here, again, to come back home, win 3 or 4 games after you won 4 or 5 games on your last road trip. I still think the Devils are better than they're playing, but you gotta keep it going, man.
Before we leave you for the show, a couple of relevant scores from this afternoon in the NHL. Washington goes into New York. They lose 5-2. So the Islanders do the Jets a favor in terms of the Southeast Division. Well, although the Islanders are actually closer to the Jets than the Capitals are in terms of the standings.
And Washington showing that huge victory over Florida was merely an aberration.
That's right. And in another game in Boston, the Philadelphia Flyers go into Boston. Don't really show up. They lose 3-0 to the Boston Bruins. Apparently, a closed door meeting occurring right now in the Flyers' dressing room.
Well, I hope they have a phone to call for a defenseman and maybe a new goalie, because that's what they need in the closed door meeting.
Well, I can't speak to that, but apparently, according to Sam Carcitti on Twitter, Peter Laviolette is reading his team the Riot Act. The meeting is now 12 minutes in length and counting after they didn't show up for a 60-minute hockey game.
Well, about that, Drew, we actually have a closed door meeting with you after the show, so just so you know.
I'm getting called onto the carpet?
It's
not red. Let's finish this show.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Cheers and jeers, Richard Pollock started off.
I'm giving a cheer to Ryan Getzlaff. You know, he gets a big deal, but I think people always criticize, a player, you know, he obviously gets the most money essentially available to him, but a guy who's, to me, played the right way for his whole career, and a guy who's rewarded for playing the right way. Too often, you know, a player gets that huge payday to me and hasn't earned it. I think if anybody's earned it, Ryan Getzlaff has earned it, and let him make the money that I think that he's entitled to under the system that he plays. And he's one of the more fun players to watch as well.
Ezra Ginsberg, cheers or jeers?
I'm going to cheer Saku Koivu. He's quietly having a good year playing on the Ducks' third line. I talked about it earlier, and you know, he's got 19 points. I don't think anybody expected that from a guy who is at the end of his career, but he's giving them, you know, he was a second line center last year, and now he's been asked to move down to the third line, and he's doing a good job. I think he's a consummate professional. One of the guys that isn't really talked about after Getzlaff, Perry, Solani, so I think he gets my cheer. He's a beauty, one of the best of all time.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers by also cheering. We're watching the Brier here in studio. It's the first end. Jeff Stoughton and Ontario, Team Manitoba and Team Ontario, tied at 0-0 in the 1-2 page playoff. So I'm going to give my cheer to the skip of Team Newfoundland from 1971 and 1975. You better know him as Bob Cole, broadcaster and apparently competitive curler from about 40 some odd years ago. So that's who gets my cheer. And of course, we cheer Jeff Stoughton and Team Manitoba on as they try and win the Brier in Edmonton this weekend.
What about Vic Peters? He's still around?
I don't think he curls competitively anymore, but he's still around, I'm sure, on the circuit. That's it for this Saturday afternoon in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Andrew Gross from The Record in New Jersey, George Johnson from the Calgary Herald, and comedian Earl Skakel. A big thank you to our sponsors, Bernstein's Deli, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, the Linden Market Dental Center, Elite Sports Injury Clinics, and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. Wednesday night, NHL midweek, 6 to 8 here on TSN 1290. Next Saturday, The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, noon to 3 here on TSN 1290. For producer Tim and producer Remus, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.